Hello, friends. Welcome to Mostly Harmless. I'm your host, Damn It Damien. Buddies, thanks for tuning in this week. This week, we have a really, really cool, really vulnerable chat with my new friend, Karay Calloway, a.k.a. Queen Kwong, who's on the show this week. Karay joins me to chat about her new album, Couples Only. It's out now on Sonic Ritual. Back around 2005, Karay was discovered at the age of 17 by Trent Reznor, and she's been a working musician ever since. In today's chat, we talk about her brief time growing up in Denver, Colorado, where her dad owned the infamous Rock Island nightclub. Then we get into the how and why she makes art. We also talk a little bit about her divorce to a famous musician. We don't say any names, but you can probably figure it out if you Google. This is a really, really cool chat and different than a lot of stuff that we've been doing lately. I went into this trying to be a lot more vulnerable. Me and my girlfriend have been fighting a lot lately. I really just have been trying to figure out who I am since I landed in Napa, California from Denver, Colorado. It's a lot of like, who am I? What am I doing? I'm trying to make art, but nobody's paying any attention. Do I keep going? Do I quit? So that's fueling a lot of these interviews. Not to mention, like, right before doing this interview, the night before, me and my girlfriend had a really, really big fight. And so I was in a really vulnerable place and just kind of like rock bottom, so to speak. And chatting with Karay, I really did try to be honest, open, vulnerable to see where that would bring this conversation. And we had a real, real cool chat about what it means to make art and recovery and finding your community. This interview was done months ago, but since moving to Napa, I've been working two jobs. I'm working 6 days a week. It's been hard to find time to adjust to the schedule and to still make art that I like to make. And yeah, I consider these interviews art, even though it's just me just drinking too much coffee and acting a fool on the microphone. So anyway, Karay, thanks for hanging out and chatting with me. Thanks for getting vulnerable with me. Thanks for letting me make it get weird. It's a really, really, really vulnerable chat amongst strangers. And those are kind of my favorite because we really, I don't know, man. I'm just a real big fan of it. Most importantly, this is a cool episode. You can't see it through the podcast, but Karay's pet squirrel, who's not really a pet, it's more like the neighborhood squirrel that hangs out on our back porch, comes and visits with us. So for most of the interview, she's feeding a damn pet squirrel. It's so awesome. Hopefully we can get some of that video up on the internet for you guys to check out. So Calloway's new album, Couples Only, is out now. The music video that she made with Johnny Knoxville, which we talk about at the end of the episode, just came out this last week. It's damn good. We'll have a link to that and all of the Queen Kwong videos over at mostlyharmlesspodcast.com or find them on YouTube. Her and her team are making some real cool videos, and that's what brought me into her music was really the mastery that they're behind the videos for stuff like I Know Who You Are, Sad Man with Johnny Knoxville, and On the Run. Some damn cool artwork and visuals. We talk about all that in today's chat. So before we get into this chat, let's listen to the song I Know Who You Are, and let's start this chat with a deep, dark tune.
best, you're spineless. At worst, you're a thief. At best, you're a liar. At worst, you'll leave. At best, you'll leave me.
My name's Damien. I guess, obviously. I don't know. How are you?
I'm Caray.
Caray.
How are you? Yeah.
Caray and not Carrie.
Yeah, it's Caray.
People constantly get my name wrong. I'm sure they constantly get your name wrong. Do you mind at this point? Does it drive you crazy?
No, I don't even care at this point. But yeah, 99% of the time they get it wrong. But I think there's ways to remember it. I think people struggle with it, but then they've come up. I've heard a lot of clever ways, like courageous or crazy or crayon or crayfish. The list goes on.
I love all those. Just to give you a heads up, I'm weird, I'm awkward, I'm goofy, and I'm already doing a great job at it.
Me too.
So what's going on today? What are you up to today?
I'm overwhelmed with work. Like, it's a little bit of a problem. I just finished editing a music video for the new single that comes out a little later this month. The video was due a couple weeks ago. So I did that. And then I'm trying to get together, do pre-production for the next video.
Cool.
That actually Johnny Knoxville is starring in. And so we're trying to knock that out in just one day later this month. And I have not done anything for that. So that's another thing I'm doing. And I have a job I'm doing for an ad campaign for, you know, a real job. It's a lot.
Does it feel good to be so productive?
I never suffer from like having nothing to do or not being productive. I'm never unproductive. I'm actually just, it's more, I take too much on and I do too much and I'm constantly multitasking. It's, I think, a coping mechanism to an extent.
Yeah.
Or a distraction to just be a workaholic. Even when I'm not doing something publicly that, like, you know, you publicly know about, I'm always doing about 10 different things. It is nice to have people be aware of this new record and to actually be putting stuff out publicly. It's part of the excitement, I guess, you know. And I think my last tour was right before lockdown, or I guess it was winter of 2019. So it's almost been, I guess, it's been 2.5 years, and that's really strange. And I think it does feel like I've lost touch with that part of myself in a way. So I am curious to find out how I respond to getting up and doing it again, which always, you know, touring always feels like you're doing more than you are. It's like kind of a way, it's escapism really, but it's not real. It's you feel like you're being productive and you're busy and you're doing stuff because every day you're in a different city and putting on these shows and having the, you know, getting that face to face time, and you feel, it feels good. It's an acknowledgement. It's being recognized for your output and, your art, but then you come back to real life and you realize that you haven't done anything. Like, time has passed and everyone else has moved on and done things while you were on tour, but you were just playing shows. And so it's kind of this weird alternate reality, but it definitely feels good.
I totally get the workaholic thing. Ever since I can remember, I've always had like a full-time job and then a hobby job, whether it be working in a music venue, doing interviews or whatnot. So there was a time where I tried to purposely not have a side project going. And that was like, I read a whole lot more, but the entire time I felt guilty for not like writing a book or doing this or doing that. So I totally get that thing. What are some of the other projects you develop when you are working out these things?
Yeah. I mean, because I'm so, you know, I've spent my musical career being pretty DIY. So I'm always hands-on with everything. So, you know, whether it's like graphic design mock-ups for the record or for content or cut downs for videos, I edit everything. I, you know, direct or co-direct everything. I'm art director on everything. So that part, music is a whole all-encompassing part of my, you know, job, I guess, that requires many other jobs. But then I also am a creative director and content creator for ad agencies. That's a, like a side hustle, or I'm trying to have an adult job. That's a new thing for me, just trying to create more stability in my life in that way. I started the podcast, which we're taking a hiatus from because there's just too much going on right now.
Yeah.
But that was a lot of work. And then I also founded a CBD, like an all natural CBD bath and skincare line called Bath Cult that I launched last year. So, and I do like all the packaging mockups and graphic design. And I spent the last year really focusing on learning how to use Photoshop and Illustrator and et cetera, et cetera. So doing a lot of that. I do copywriting on the side. I graduated from college to, you know, write stuff. I'm making the sculptural, like these sculptural epoxy, huge art pieces to hopefully start doing more visual arts, mixed media stuff. I have taken up this hobby of photography that I've started to really like more than anything. So I find myself just taking a bunch of film pictures to put on some little like Instagram photo account. I focus more on that than the Queen Quam one at this point, you know, just because it's, you get excited about new stuff. And I definitely get trapped in that excitement and go down wormholes. So it's hard for me to just focus on one thing. I'm just trying, it's like always trying to give 100% of my attention to 10 different things, which is not really possible. So I'm told, but I keep trying to prove that it is, but maybe it is if you're willing to completely just drive yourself crazy and overwhelm yourself to death, which is what I do.
I'm in a similar place. Me and the girlfriend just moved to Napa, California, and I'm out here.
Awesome.
I'm like struggling trying to find work. So I'm like trying to start my own business. And instead, and I have a little bit of money, I could pay somebody to build the website, but I have a particular vision in mind of how it has to be. And so I'm just beating it into shape. And it's so frustrating, but it's also, as soon as I figure out how to make the WordPress or whatever do what it needs to do, it's also like, holy shit, I did this. Like that's going to be a pretty great feeling. Have you surprised yourself with any of these things that you've taken on figuring out, you know, with some of the stuff you figured out how to do?
I don't even think about it really. I just keep doing. I need to maybe take a minute and acknowledge whatever skills I've acquired or whatever new stuff I've learned how to do and figured out on my own. Like, I guess I could pat myself on the back, but you know, I'm sure you know how it is when you're an entrepreneur or an artist, there's never like that much of a financial reward. It seems it's a lot of work for very little reward. So I'm not used to, you know, I never feel like I can take a break because you're always just kind of chasing the next thing you have to figure out or have to put out maybe someday.
Yeah. My girlfriend's going to listen to this and she's going to wonder right about this point. What I don't know anything about astrology, but what is your sign?
I'm a Virgo.
Do you know the other things, the rising and all that stuff?
I know nothing about anything. Okay, cool. I always just, I mean, all my friends are into that stuff, but I never pay much attention to it. But I feel like whenever people who know about that stuff, whenever I explain myself and then I say I'm a Virgo, they're like, oh yeah, you're such a Virgo.
Yeah.
Like, I don't know what that means. But I mean, I'm pretty A-type when it comes to a lot of things. I don't know any of the details.
Yeah. I mean, I don't either. I'm sure my girlfriend, she'll, you know, slap me, not really slap me, but she will oh my God, no. I could totally tell this. She'll do that.
Yeah. Well, let me know what she says. Let me know her feedback.
Okay. So I don't know where to go from there. Oh, I do actually. We share something in common in that we both lived in Denver, Colorado for a long time.
Really?
Yeah.
Yeah. I'm from Denver.
Is that home for you, is Denver?
I mean, I was born there. Cool. And I spent most of my, I guess, up until my early teens. Yeah. So I was there for my early childhood. Yeah. How about you?
I moved to Colorado in 2001, spent a lot of years in Colorado Springs, just hanging out down there. And then eventually moved to Denver and lived there for about 9 years and only just now moved here. So there's probably not any overlap between us, but.
I think I actually left around 2001. And then I was back in 2004 for a year. I've never lived outside of Denver. I meet a lot of people who ask me about even like suburbs or areas that are outside of Denver. And I never know what they're talking about. I mean, I know of Colorado Springs, but I was pretty much only spent my childhood in like downtown Denver. So, but I love it there.
And your father ran a club?
Yeah, a club and a hotel. I grew up in the hotel. It's called the Oxford. It's in lower downtown. And there was a bar there called the Cruise Room. That's an Art Deco bar that's pretty famous. And so that was my dad's. And then he also had an industrial nightclub called Rock Island.
Rock Island. I went to Rock Island.
Okay. So yeah, I mean, that was there for like 20 years. I think they were on.
I think it's an advertising firm now.
Yeah, it's totally different. It's weird. I saw it for the first time earlier this year, for the first time since it was Rock Island, and it is totally different. I mean, all of downtown's really different, but that's where I grew up right there, very much in Rock Island. So
I grew up kind of like a punk rock kid, you know, and I know you have some punk rock stuff for you. At 40 years old, I'm only just now starting to discover more of what's out there musically, and I'm trying to branch out. And your video in particular for I Know Who You Are really jumped out at me, and I was just like, this is rad. And it's probably something I wouldn't have liked a few years ago. And so I'm always curious, like, because I went this way, how do you get into this more of this industrial mindset? What is that, what you would call your music? Like, how do you get to where you find this stuff and it comes out of you? Does that make any sense, that rambling?
Yeah, I mean, honestly, my music was something that's actually probably hindered any kind of financial success with me in terms of my career, has been because I don't really fit into a genre, and it's really rubs people the wrong way. It's also, nowadays, people want to know exactly who you are, what you sound like. They want references. Oh, you sound just like this, sound just like that. Like, that's how people market. Publicists have really struggled with me. And I think listeners too, because unless there are very few people, listeners now, who have the patience or attention span to really listen to everything. So maybe a song like I Know Who You Are, if someone only listens to that from me, they'll assume that that's the music I make. But every song on the record is probably, you know, I have a doo-wop type song. I have a song that started out as a rap song. I have singer-songwriter, more like finger-picking stuff. It's all over the place. I don't, I think the only really common denominator, it's very honestly me and pretty raw. Yeah. But musical influences, I mean, I don't think I've ever consciously tried to sound like anything. It's just kind of whatever happens. And I listen to, I mean, I don't really even listen to music anymore unless it's, you know, I listen to a lot of rap. I've been like that for years. I've never been an industrial music fan.
Yeah.
Even though my dad, his nightclub was more industrial, and I guess it would be goth. Very like The Cure and Echo and the Bunnymen, and then, you know, moved more into punk and industrial. And then there was, you know, I saw Skinny Puppy play there when I was like 4. But that was never really what I was into. You know, my favorite band growing up was like The Stooges.
I only say industrial more out of ignorance of, like, I only really know just punk rock shit. So
yeah. And I think there are elements of a lot of different things, probably because, and also this new record, and you could hear it in I Know Who You Are, it's a lot of programmed beats. So drum machine stuff and synths. And so of course that's like more industrial and it's heavier in that way. But, you know, then I have songs that are more like reminiscent of like Blur's 13, you know? So I think it's kind of all over the place. I'm not sure how it got to be that way. There was never a conscious, there was never an intention I set to sound like anything. I definitely have punk roots in terms of what I gravitated towards when I was younger was like really the Stooges. And then I got into like Brit rock or like more obscure stuff. You know, I really liked The Birthday Party. Of course, that's like Nick Cave stuff. And and then I got into like really, I was really into Royal Trucks, like starting in the eighth grade. And I think that influenced me a lot. I mean, it's probably a curse, like between Royal Trucks and Swans. And when I discovered that stuff, I kind of went very left of center. Yeah. So yeah, I'm not sure where I get it from, but I think it's just because there was a very diverse, oh my God, my pet squirrel's here. Hold on 1 second.
Okay.
Walter. Hi.
Sorry. I mean, he's not a real pet squirrel. He's a wild squirrel, but I hand feed him and stuff. He's become very friendly, nice. But he hasn't been around for a couple of days. So I didn't know where he's been. And so yeah. I'm relieved to see him.
I've never heard those words ever in my life strung together. And it's, that was beautiful. So thank you. I want to talk about the squirrel, but no, we need the
focus.
ADD, focus. What I really liked is last night I got really stoned. I turned on just your YouTube channel and I just sat back and just let it wash over me. And everything is very, very different except you. Your voice is very unique and significant in that. And there's a certain vibe that you, even on the early stuff to now, there's a vibe to everything. It seems like a real literary kind of music it's like you're making. And I want to know, like, just how do you tap in? How do you find that vibe? Is it something you craft or is it something you grab in the ether and just let flow through you?
The latter. I think I'm a pretty big control freak and perfectionist when it comes to a lot of things in my life that don't have to do with art. Yeah. But when it comes to anything artistic, I think the only way I've been able to create things has been in a flow state without thinking about it. And without striving for perfection, I feel like perfection really works against creativity. And I just have no interest in it. When it comes to art, I think I value honesty over perfection. So it is just whatever comes out. Whatever it sounds like. Yeah, I guess. But yeah, it's definitely the latter.
Is there any shaping of it? Are you the vessel or does it come through you more or less fully formed? How do you get to your flow state, I guess, is a better rambling question. I don't know.
My degree is in writing. I understand, you know, like I went to school for it and I really struggled. It was a lot harder for me to find any kind of flow state when it came to, here, I'll show you. Come here. That's Walter.
Hi, Walter.
You know, I never mastered it with writing in terms of being able to snap into a flow state with writing. I think the issue with writing for me, just writing, like I did experimental nonfiction and I did all sorts of different kinds of in school writing formats, but it was really difficult for me to, there was not that like immediacy that I feel with music where you can just, it's immediate. Like you just do and sounds come out and words come out and those are lyrics. It's stream of consciousness. And I actually tried to write my thesis in school as a stream of consciousness piece. And my thesis advisor was not into it. he was like, you know, this is taking the easy way because you need to think of like plot and a takeaway and what are you, you know, a bigger message. And so, you know, I understand writing is a whole different thing. Like you struggling with that, I could totally relate to. But with music, it's so immediate. It's easier to just like flow, you know, you can just play. It's immediate. Like there's no, you don't have to think of a plot or or character development or anything like that, you know? So I think it's easier to just snap into a flow state without, yeah, it's just easier. It's kind of a pop out. Like music is just kind of just makes that easy. Writing's different.
You know, one of the things I like to think about is, you know, we're not all built the same way. Some of us are built more towards writing. Some people are built more towards music. So that's pretty awesome that you figured out how to channel this stuff. How did you figure out you could make art to begin with? Was there, because I remember it for me as a little kid, I would always ask people for permission. I'd be like, what do you guys think if I go do this? And I had to go seeking that permission. So I'm always curious how other people discovered that they could just do it on their own. Like, how did you figure that out?
I was the opposite of you, I guess. I grew up in a really kind of weird way and I didn't have rules. I did at school and I always was kind of like a teacher's pet, honestly. Like I was always the favorite and whatever, but at home, I didn't have any rules. I was unsupervised all the time. So I never asked for permission to do anything. I never had to. And so I think for me, it was really, that really helped with being able to be creative because I didn't think of it as I need to check in with anyone else.
It's still something at 40 years old, I'm still struggling with. I'm just like constantly seeking that validation. One thing I like about your work is it does feel a lot more, art is the focus. It's not about, you can tell that immediately through your stuff, that art is the real focus. It's not about making money for you. It seems.
No, I gave that up. I mean, I think because I had more of a punk background, I didn't ever prioritize that. I think it wasn't until honestly recently where I started thinking, wow, maybe I really fucked myself over and not like by not paying more attention to that side of things, the money side of things. Because, you know, when you're a teenager in my 20s, it was like, oh yeah, I'll just do what I want and play the music I want. And I don't care if I have to like tour and sleep on sofas the rest of my life. And then you grow up and you're like, wait, I have to pay bills and I don't want to sleep on sofas the rest of my life. Like, how do I make what I've been doing this entire time, like, how do I make that into a profitable endeavor? Because you grow up and you run out of time and you realize there are adult responsibilities like healthcare and all that, not like the not fun stuff, all the debt and the student debt and just bills, just the really boring, you know, basic things that you need to provide for yourself. And because I never cared about making money through music, I haven't set myself up very well with that stuff. Yeah. I've made conscious efforts to present what I do in a way that's a little bit more accessible, not by compromising the actual content, but by maybe putting a little more attention and pay more attention to like how I'm recording. You know, like it's already kind of hard material for a lot of people to listen to. So I might as well have it mixed well. I might as well record it in a way that's more, you know, that isn't total shit lo-fi, like you're listening to, you know, my first LP is really difficult to listen to for, it's called Ghetto Witness and it's sonically just really hard to listen to. And I kind of have embraced that being an artist thing, like people who appreciate that stuff really appreciate it and are really loyal to me. I have a really great fan base, you know, like small, but really loyal and really understand me. And Ghetto Witness kind of drew a line in the sand where it's like, if you don't understand this, you don't understand me. But if you do understand it, you're going to understand, you're going to be into everything I'm up to and what I do, you know, like it was kind of a way to like find my people, but it was a really polarizing record. And I think since that record to this new one, there are obvious things like in terms of the production, like sonically, where more attention was paid to those kind of boring details, just to make it so that it's like easier for people to digest sonically speaking, not so much the actual noises that I'm making and what I'm writing, but just listener wise, like listening, if it's going to be on streams and Spotify or whatever the fuck that stupid shit is, like, okay. you know, it needs to have a certain sound quality. Because I'm not in the business now of just like passing around mixtapes I make, you know, that's just not the world we live in.
No, and that's something like right now all my life I've been a writer, all my life I've been working in music venues, all my life I have, you know, done all these things, but only as hobbies. And it turns out I don't want to be a restaurant manager anymore. This is what I want to do, but I never learned how to do it for a living because it was always a hobby. Yeah. And now I'm like, how do people like, and I'm also worried that maybe I've already missed my chance because the contemporary guys I've been writing with are all selling books and I feel like I'm starting all over from scratch. So sorry to turn that into me for a second, but
yeah. No, I mean, I totally really, I think every artist, indie artist who's not doing anything mainstream right now can relate to that feeling. I feel like that, you know, I've been focusing on music as a career for my entire adult life.
Yeah.
But I never figured out how to make a substantial, like sustainable living from it. And then, you know, I think when I was in my late 20s or when I turned 30, it was that, oh, I don't want to live paycheck to paycheck doing weird, you know, being a stripper or waiting tables. Like, that's not what I want for myself, because also it's not financially like sustainable. It's just impossible.
It has been pretty interesting since I've started back on this journey of interviewing people. The people that I keep crossing paths with are people so very much, you know, same similar places. So I wonder, do you believe in destiny? Is there?
No.
No?
I don't. I think that, like, you know, I don't believe anything happens like for a reason.
Sure.
I think that's comforting if you can believe that, but I don't.
Yeah.
And it's hard. It's like, I don't know if that, cause that also means that there really isn't an answer and that I don't find comfort or I'm not able, because I don't believe it. I can't be like, oh, well, what, you know, what's meant to happen will happen. Shit can be really bad for people and never get better and they suffer and they die, you know, like that's just kind of life. Unfortunately, I mean, I think I feel like I'm being a real downer right now, but I don't think of it as pessimism. I think it's just realistic.
Yeah.
And it's hard to feel that way and also constantly have to motivate myself to create more and do more, but you know, you never know.
Yeah.
I think it's just trying to find a balance of like being able to do what you want and being able to survive. And that's really, it's really hard to figure out how to do both. And I haven't, you know, like, I mean, I'm obviously surviving and I am doing what I want, but like stability and like sustainability it's really hard. Like there's no clear answer.
And I kind of think, you know, for me, I do put a little bit more stock into luck and I don't believe there's a little white guy sitting in the chair upstairs watching, but sometimes it just feels weird, you know, that here I am looking for these answers and I keep meeting people such as yourselves that are, I'm finding my people in a really weird, interesting way of Zoom interviews. And, you know, again, I'm just rambling. I'm not quite sure where I'm.
No, going. I mean, I think after a while you do find your people.
Yeah.
And some, you know, even when it feels like it's impossible, I have a very small core group of true friends or people I collaborate with. And it's really special. There aren't many of them. It's been really hard to find. I can't even look. He's making me feel so guilty. I mean, it's a struggle to find people who you align with, like, especially artistically, but on every level. And so when you do, it's special and reassuring, and you have to keep fostering those kind of relationships because, you know, if you're doing anything that's off the beaten path, it's difficult to find people who get you or get what you're trying to do or can support it and don't make you feel either crazy or don't undervalue you or underappreciate you. I mean, it's hard.
Yeah. That is important. Like I tell you, I feel rather foolish sometimes still trying to do this thing. But I have been lucky enough to find those people that maybe they shouldn't be encouraging me, but it is great to have these people that genuinely absolutely love and understand what you're doing. And how do you find these people? Because I'm having a hard time finding these people. How have you found them?
You know, it's really difficult to, it's taken many years, and I put out a lot of polarizing material to kind of draw a line in the sand to figure out where my people were and who they were and who would just fall by the wayside. And luckily those are the kind of fans who stick with you forever. And the few people who I do collaborate with are the people I've collaborated with forever, too, like Joe Cardamone, who I've known for 15 years now, more actually, maybe 17. And I don't, you know, I try to keep an open mind, but I think I've been around the block enough times to know when somebody isn't getting what my vision is. Mm-hmm. And that happens most of the time, I've found, like trying to collaborate with other people. So I don't really try to force anything. It either happens naturally and you get it or you don't. And so it's been a very like, my people have been filtered down a lot, mm-hmm. you know? And I think it's harder nowadays too, because it's hard to cut through all the content. Everybody can be an artist. Everybody can be a writer. Everybody's a musician. Everybody's a photographer, blah, blah, blah. Everybody has a social media account. And then, you know, you're a slave to these algorithms. I mean, I have a new record coming out. One of the only ways I have, you know, because I've been such a DIY artist, one of the only ways I connect with my fans is through social media, which is already complete bullshit, mindfuck. But then on top of that, there's, you know, Instagram and Facebook who are controlling these algorithms. Like for the last several months, my Instagram, for instance, this is like the insights, my posts are reaching 97% less of my audience than they were 4 months ago. So like a lot of my followers aren't even seeing my post about my music coming out. And it sucks that something like that can have such a detrimental effect and really like affect my livelihood. And it's like fucking Facebook, you know? It's terrifying to think about that. It's really overwhelming because it's like, how do you find your people and get through to new people if there's this huge corporation with these bots and algorithms that are just suppressing every, you know, all the stuff that you're working so hard on, people never even see or hear. It's a really weird world. It's really weird. So I think it is just personally connect. It's slow, you know, unless luck is on your side and you just get lucky and something blows up for you fast. It's a really slow process. You know, it's not, nothing's guaranteed. It's scary.
We should probably talk about Couples Only.
Yeah. Yeah.
July 12th. I haven't listened to the record. I've only heard I Only Know Who You Are and On the Run, which again, two totally different songs, but they share a same vibe. What were you going for this record? What can you tell people about it?
For people who've been following me for a while, it's pretty obvious I went through a divorce. It was really traumatic and ugly. And I don't use those words lightly. I really felt like a lot of my power was taken away with that. It was, I was stripped of my voice, it felt like. And that's what happens when like you're up against a certain level of money and power. This record really was me setting the story straight and kind of reclaiming my voice. And I think I didn't try to be poetic with this stuff. It just came out as it came out. Some stuff's really literal and blunt. And I leaned into that. I just committed to that because I needed to set the record straight and get in a really clear way, I think. And it was just, it's very factual. and I think I also just needed to get it out of myself. I was carrying around a lot. I wasn't talking about the end of my marriage or the divorce publicly. And I had a couple really weird experiences where I did try to, like every time I did speak openly about it, even to friends, like not even publicly, but people were very, even my divorce lawyer was very like, oh, you know, you don't want to cause trouble. Like, oh, why cause, don't stir the pot. Why make this worse than it is? And it was like a lot of silencing and it was really dismissive. And it was like, why don't make this more uncomfortable? But that meant me sitting with the discomfort by myself and me having to like swallow a lot. And it became, it just wasn't fair. You know, I mean, life isn't fair, but this was kind of my only way to reclaim my voice. And I needed that. So this record just stands as a testament to that. Yeah. I mean, and it's not all about that. I think a lot of it's also just, you know, I was diagnosed with cystic fibrosis a few years ago, and I was still in the process of accepting and dealing with that and what that means. And I think there was just a lot of loss and the realization that things are extremely temporary and you can't count on anything. There are no guarantees in this life, and facing just mortality. And those are all themes in this record too. I think people, especially after, you know, living through COVID times, everyone can relate to those themes to an extent, you know.
I've watched the video for I Know Who You Are, I don't know, 10, 12 times. I loved it. I haven't seen the film that it was based on, Possession.
Possession, yeah.
But I need to. Yeah. I meant to actually watch that so we could talk about that, but I hadn't got around to it. But there's something, the day I was like talking to your publicist about doing this chat was the day the Roe v. Wade Supreme Court decision came out. Mm-hmm. And I was watching that video and I was thinking about, instead of it being about possession, it felt like the mask was coming off and you were actually showing your true face of how you really feel. And that's how it felt for me, at least. It was just like her just screaming in rage at all this crazy shit going on. And here's just this moment where you get to take off your mask and like show how you really feel. Am I close on that, or is that all just crazy rambly talk?
No, I mean, I haven't thought, you know, I didn't put as much thought into it, or I haven't analyzed it as much to that level, because it was one, it was very much, you know, it was shot in one take. There was no thought, but the one thing that is very true that I'm glad you picked up on is it was all very honest and raw. A very honest and raw showcase of emotions that there was no posturing. Yeah. It was very, because it was one take, I had to snap into a flow state and feel every single emotion behind the song and behind the meaning and at 100% and express it with my body and my face. And I didn't think about what my body was doing. I didn't think about the faces I was making because I think I'd get self-conscious. It's not like, you know, I make those kind of videos, especially that one. I'm not coming off as some cute girl, you know, and as a woman in this industry, it makes me self-conscious. Like, I don't want to look bad or, you know, but at the same time, it had to be, like you said, taking the mask off. It had to be that raw, like that visceral to have that effect where it's like that honest, like I'm not looking cute right now. This is what this emotion looks like at 100%. And it was really draining. Even though it was one take, it was so draining because it was me committing to these really intense emotions at 100% for, you know, 4 minutes or whatever, however long it was. And it was really intense for me. The movie, you know, it was inspired by a scene in the movie Possession. That scene symbolizes a lot. There's a lot of allegory there. And it also, there was a miscarriage that symbolized and kind of like this crazed induced, like this possession, like losing being possessed by insanity and like losing all control, et cetera. So the movie, there's a lot of symbolism there. I definitely reframed it to be more fitting to the meaning of the song, the meaning of this record, and feelings I can personally relate to. But I think we can all relate to having strong emotions, especially with where the world's at now and what's been going on, even like politically and socially and culturally. And so the tunnel to me represented more of like all the things when you're going through something and all the emotions you feel going through something that's really traumatic and you're feeling out of control and you feel crazy, you know, you have these feelings that feel fucking crazy. And that like the tunnel is that process of it, you know? And in this video is a little more optimistic because at the end I like make it through to the other side and it's more beautiful, but that's not how the movie Possession ends at all. But you know, I think you're right. It is taking the mask off and really showing what emotion really is, you know, with my body, with my expressions. It's very, that was really the most honest account of it.
It shows, again, I've watched it many, many, many times.
I appreciate that.
And I really do like it. Also, you know, personal note, me and the girlfriend were fighting yesterday. So I just went on a long walk with, and that was one of the songs in my headphones. And it's good for that. It's weird there's a good soundtrack for storming off out of a fight and walking with it. And
I think a lot of my songs are probably the soundtrack to that.
Yeah. It's cool.
Yeah.
I mean, it's not cool, but it was interesting. It was like, oh, this is the perfect vibe for this moment because I do feel so fucking crazy in this world. And to see that video, yeah. And it did really feel like, were you actually screaming when you were making that video?
I was silent.
Silent. I think that's actually even harder probably, right?
Yeah, it was. I mean, I think that's actually what put so much strain on my face because I had to feel what you feel when you're screaming and then keep it in. Mm-hmm. So I was like really just about to pop. But it was a public tunnel. We had one take to do it, you know. So I couldn't scream. It would draw attention to us. Yeah. People would come in, ruin the shot, call the cops, whatever. So I did it in silence. It's pretty weird. Pretty weird.
And I think that's the thing I connect most with is, aren't we all just kind of quietly screaming inside right now?
Yeah.
I mean, yeah. Especially after this Supreme Court bullshit that's going on.
Yeah. I mean, the toll it takes on us internally, you know, and we're all just trying to keep it together. And I think it's really hard when you don't have, there's no like cathartic release in that way. We're all just kind of like boiling inside. That video is really, it means a lot to me. And it I'm glad it's effective. I mean, it proves it's effective by just your takeaway from it. So
I'm glad my rambling, over caffeinated nonsense made some sense there.
No, it's definitely.
I really liked the video for On the Run as well. That was a pretty
totally different,
but there is still like, an anger underlying like layers underneath it that really comes out. When you write these songs, do you have the visuals in mind? Cause they seem to go so well hand in hand. Or is it, how do you figure out those videos?
You know, the videos, we decide on what singles we want to do. Usually I just talk to Joe about it and he and I collaborate on pretty much everything. You know, he does the videos with me too. We kind of spitball like what visuals are coming to us, or there's things that I'm really influenced by or inspired by. For instance, like there are movies or pieces of art or things I'm super inspired by, and sometimes they align, like they make sense in some of the songs that I have already, and I'm like, I wonder if there's a way we could nod to that, you know. Like On the Run comes off as a love song or whatever, but you know, it's also self-deprecating and self-aware because it's like, it's all, love is like kind of just an illusion and every, you know, and to me, and you know, like you want that like dramatic, intense romance. And if that's not there, it's boring, but you know, maybe actual true, like mature love is boring, you know, and what do we do with that when we're all so influenced by like Disney and like The Bachelor? And that's what the video is based on, is like finding your like one soulmate, and it has to be this intense, crazy, fairy tale and that's just bullshit. Usually that like works against you because when something like burns that hot, that fast, it like, you know, it's fleeting. So I think the meaning of that song and then thinking about culturally, like what's up and what, where we're at now, it made me think of all those reality TV shows like The Bachelor. And so that's how those concepts aligned. But yeah, I don't ever have like things totally planned out until it just hits me kind of. Like, yeah. Oh, that would be funny if I did this, or that makes sense if I were to do this. You know, this Johnny Knoxville video, I have like a pretty crazy idea. And it goes with a song of mine that it kind of makes sense, but it also doesn't, but we're just going to like, there's enough to align, you know,
yeah.
It all symbolizes a similar message. I think there's a similar message that's coming through with like the visuals I choose and the single it's for.
Nice. That's great. Can you tell us more about the Johnny Knoxville video, or is it too early?
It's going to come out right when the record comes out, I think right after. Sure. We're shooting it this month. It's at the end of the month. It's only, you know, we're doing a 1-day shoot. It's still very DIY and pretty crazy. And I'm going to make him do a lot of intense shit. I think he's maybe a little nervous, but yeah, he's what I thought he'd be perfect for the video for. It's a song called Sad Man. And I thought he'd be perfect for the video because it is a song that's kind of my song, an ode. I wouldn't call it an ode, but an ode to a sarcastic ode to the music industry in LA and washed up band dudes here who think they're all that. And it's pretty scathing. So I thought he'd be a great main person for that. Yeah. I wanted it to be like some actual old rock star, but then all my old rock star friends were like really triggered by the song. And we're very like, you know, some of them are just insulted and not talking to me right now. But, you know, I think what's great about Johnny Knoxville is he's like able to be self-deprecating and doesn't take himself too seriously. I mean, it's not like a Jackass style thing, but I needed somebody who's willing to not be self-conscious.
So you mentioned your health a little bit. How is your health these days? Are you doing okay?
It's up and down. You know, most of the time I don't feel like I have any issues, health issues. Yeah. I definitely have issues, but most of the time I don't even think about it. How cystic fibrosis manifests in me is really unique. The symptoms I have are totally atypical and not really understood very, you know, the main one is like the blood filling up in my lungs and basically like, and that happens really fast. There's not really warning. So it's just trying to stay on top of lung infections and making sure that the inflammation that those infections cause don't get out of hand, doesn't get out of hand. Yeah. And I, you know, I feel like really I have pain, especially in my left lung, occasionally. That's pretty intense, but it happens really fast and it's fleeting. So it hasn't affected me in a typical way where I know a lot of people with CF are affected. It's kind of a mystery, but right now, you know, I'm fine. I'm good. Yeah.
Well, just listening to you, you know, describe some of these things, I feel foolish now for asking if you believe in destiny, because it's like, man, there's, I don't know. How do you find I get the sense that you're a very strong person.
Thanks. Yeah. Yeah, I mean, I am
good.
I can say that much about myself. Yeah. I mean, I think humans are really resilient and we, you know, that's evolution. Like we have learned to evolve and adapt and survive. As well as we can. So I can't really like credit myself or anything about myself in particular. I think it's just being a human. Things that you feel like are impossible to survive, you survive. I mean, emotional things, you know, and then of course we can't beat death, you know, there's no way around it, but I think it's just a matter of, things are what they are and you deal with it and you learn to survive with whatever you're handed, you know, until you literally can't anymore. But you know, I think people, I know I can really, I've had periods of time in my life where all I wanted to do was give up because it felt impossible. And the only option is to just, all you could do is just not give up, because then what are you going to do? It's like, okay, kill yourself or just feel like it's impossible. And so you might as well just see what happens, you know? And I, so you don't get, not giving up just means not killing yourself at, in those kind of times. And then day by day, you know, things do, there is, things get better, things go up and down, things get worse. That's just kind of life.
Hey, Karay, thanks so much for the wonderful chat. Let's end this episode. Let's exit with the song Sad Man. And if you like this, please go check out that video. It's got Johnny Knoxville in it, and it's a pretty great video. Again, please check out all of her videos. They are all really incredible. Start out with I Know Who You Are, and then finish it up with this song, Sad Man. Couples Only is out now on Sad Ritual Records. All right, guys, we'll see you in the funny pages. You take care.
This shit.